Good morning, Vietnam.
Welcome again to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, the show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates us to move. Each week, I'm talking to successful people who have ditched their 9-to-5 to become their own bosses and gain a 24/7. And I'm also talking to folks who have left the status quo altogether to carve out their own particular brand of happiness. Consider this your Monday motivation and your weekly invitation to find what your passion is and figure out how to work it out. Today's guest here with me is Doug Housladen, the director of traffic, parking, and
transportation.
Let me jump into why I've invited Doug onto the show this week. So a few weeks ago,
is it to appeal your parking tickets?
Yes, because I'm sure at this point you know that I have many. I am a scaff law. That I shouldn't say that on the radio, but I am a scaff law.
I know
of
where
sorts.
Your car is right now.
That's true. That's so true. So a few weeks ago, after interviewing John Martin, who is, I guess he likes to say, not the owner of, he doesn't run the Bradley Street Bike Co-op. that's the thing he likes to say.
The unowner.
The unowner, yeah.
Or the unmanager of.
Exactly. Right. I called Doug up to dig up some information around bike lanes and share rows in New Haven. And what should have been probably just a 10-minute conversation ended up into being like a 45-minute conversation about like cycling and transportation and bikes and a bunch of the cool things that New Haven is doing.
I remember I was traveling that day with the mayor. We were out at
In Denver. Yeah.
And I was on my way to Fort Collins, and I have much to report from my trip. Thank you to my hosts who supported me there. And thank you, Mercy, for inviting me on. As you introduced the Work It Out segment, it's a funny, I have a government job. I am as establishment as they come these days. And yet I feel like it's still a startup experience and a passion-driven life.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be an interesting conversation today.
Right, exactly. And part of the reason why I wanted you come on is because in our conversation that day, you said this, it was kind of like a throwaway line. You just said it in passing. You didn't go to school for this, but this is a thing that you've adopted and you're learning as you go. Well, you were learning as you're going along, and you're picking up sort of best practices and tips and tricks along the way. So tell my audience, let's see, where do I want to start? Tell us what you do for on a day-to-day basis. What's an average day in Doug Housladen's life look like?
Well, the average day really does start early in the sense of checking your calendar and your Twitter feed and your social media to figure out what is going to distract you for the day and responding to those fires and trying to put them out as best as you can. Mm-hmm. So that starts pretty early when you wake up. First meetings are usually 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. But thankfully for my life, this morning I got to bike into work. I get to bike in a lot of days. So you get a good 15 minutes there on your own commute to kind of do your thing. Just also get a little workout in and get some calories burned and get your fitness started for the day. So
is it sort of obligatory that you ride a bike to work considering your title and your position?
You'd think that because you're so New Haven. I am the antithesis of parking and traffic directors.
Yeah.
Traditionally and stereotypically, folks are still driving themselves to work, and I can see why. I get a free parking. I get parking that is part of the job.
Yeah.
And I get a car that's part of the job. And
nice.
And I have multiple fleets that I manage now as part of the job, and so. Very naturally, the easiest thing to do is just to drive yourself to work. But the joy and privilege that I have working for Mayor Harp here in New Haven and serving New Haveners is that I get a 15-minute bike ride on a stretch of roadway that I've helped shape. So the morning starts off just kind of figuring out what's gonna distract you from the day and how's it going to be split up? And then most of my day is a lot of meetings and responding or not responding or trying to figure out a way to respond to the various fires of the day. So meetings that are regulatory and some that are just monthly. I just left a staff meeting. You know, people need management staff meetings.
Sort of just like the run of the mill bureaucracy that everybody has to go through.
We have a board meeting tonight at the parking authority. And so I just met with senior staff to go over the agenda, to go over our budget, to keep going and moving the ball forward on our operations plan and sort of how the capital program. So it's, you know, really nuts and bolts of a balance sheet, pro formas and trying to balance competing demands.
So you don't make this sound very exciting, but having been a reporter and needing to, you know, call you for certain things in one of my former lives, especially during storms and nor'easters, I know that your job can be exciting.
Yes, it certainly is. There's excitement and you know, even the tornadoes we had last week.
Yeah,
every sort of critical storm function, the transportation department, it plays a minor role in helping out. We're now, our department has taken over the street lighting for the city of New Haven, the maintenance. And so now,
who had it before? Public Works?
It was actually a contractor that reported to the city engineer.
Oh,
and now the city engineer really oversees the program, and I'm sort of the day-to-day manager of the program, if you will. So now that the street lighting and traffic signal team is all one thing, you know, the goals have shifted a little bit during storm response. We've added some complications and some emergency responders. So what's fascinating is all of the Wednesday storms this winter, you know, that never happened.
Yeah.
The nor'easters that never were.
Yeah.
The ones that were in existence that really paralyzed our city for a day, our storm response is really 72 hours in addition to however long the public feels it, be it lack of sleep or be it just complaints and be it, you know, follow up. And then the nor'easters that never were, you lose an entire day of work. You lose sleep. We had to cancel the tag and tow at 1 a.m, but I was there, you know, with the team or my deputy was, or our supervisors were. And so, you know, the demand on operations changes. So our day to day is really the mundane of the bureaucracy of making sure purchase orders are happening and we move the ball. But you know, it's also the exciting things that happen as well. Like, you know, last week we met with someone I think I've spoken with, Justin Elliker, to try and work on a New Haven Land Trust little program.
Nice.
And amongst of all of the regulatory and sort of the actual public safety work we have to do, you know, we're trying to move the ball forward on bike share. And so, meeting with a property owner last week, you know, spoke with a property owner for a good hour out of the day, just explaining the public process for how things were cited and putting them at ease with respect to liability and moving forward on working together. And then, you know, some of the more interesting and sort of depressing parts of the job are, you know, last week, derailed, if you will, due to a death on vehicular death on Shelton Ave. And so part of the job was to bike over and inspect the crash scene and work with the crash reconstruction team. And then the next morning meet with our traffic division and go over what the preliminary results of the investigation were and then take a broader look. You know, we've had an uptick in vehicular deaths. And due to crashes. And so, you know, we dove into it last week with the accident reconstruction team and the traffic team over at PD and Sean Mars leading that group, and they're doing great work. And so that, you know, that sort of changed you wake up on Monday, you know, what's your agenda for the week? A tragedy like what happened on Shelton, you know, really takes it to a different way. And you turn on the reactionary and also the good planning. So the reason that we were able to be reactionary last week was we've been working internally to set up this data team between the traffic division of the police department and the traffic division of your traffic department to really look at high crime or high crash corridors and see about what we can do to shift the needle. But all of the day-to-day, you know, tonight there's going to be a parking authority board meeting. There's a board of alders meeting. I'm supposed to be at both. And there's more days than not, you're supposed to be in two places at once. And
yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, just if I could just answer my emails, I think.
That's been a good day. So I'm happy that we started there because with giving the audience a little bit of a rundown of what your job looks like and what a day-to-day can look like, now I want to pivot and talk about what you majored in. Because I think, so part of the reason why I wanted you to come on the show is, right, it's May. It's graduation season.
It's literally graduation day.
It is graduation day here in New Haven. We started a little bit late because, you know, commencement traffic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have fleets of graduates going into the job market, figuring out what they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with the degrees that they've just earned. And they are often stopped in their tracks when they realize that maybe this isn't the thing that I want to work at 24/7. Or maybe this isn't the place that I can get a job 24/7.
God bless you if you knew what you wanted to do when you were 18 and
exactly.
You majored in it and then it all worked out for you.
Right, because
fewer and fewer people know that these
I don't
days.
Know that I know anyone who has gone that route, except nurses. Except
people
nurses.
In the medical field, where it takes a long lead time to get your requirements done. You know, those folks have really kind of planted a flag and then set
far
the course.
In advance. Yeah, because I think you sort of need to. Anything else, it's kind of like an open runway. So tell
feels like that.
Right?
I'm not an employer. Well, I mean, I do hire for jobs. In that sense, I guess I am an employer. But I wonder, so we're going to go through my experience, and I wonder if my experience is very translatable.
Mm-hmm.
And if employers feel this way.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to hear, because kudos to Mayor Harp as my employer, for someone whom recognized a skill set that didn't have the words traffic engineering in them initially.
And figuring out how that is transferable.
Yeah. And I think the, you know, side work, side gigs, side projects, the hustle.
The side gig economy,
Has really where my current skills as they apply to my day-to-day operations are one part 10 years experience managing properties and sort of managing big bureaucracy and systems, and then one part the side work that I've been doing for the last 10 years and just how that has fed into like an actual job now.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
feels crazy to me that my passion work, the 5-to-9 work that I was doing is now my 9-to-5 work. And you know, I just want to pause and just say how privileged and blessed and fortunate I am.
That is the intro to this show, though.
Yeah, I know.
That is the intro.
That's where I feel,
you fit in.
Even though I'm my job is in the charter of the city.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a traffic engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm as established as they come. You know, transportation is going through such an upheaval where every day it just feels like you're out there trying to move the needle as far as possible with as few tools as they give you and then wake up the next day and just jump in.
Do it again. So tell us a bit about where'd you go to school?
So 14 years ago, I was causing a bunch of traffic in town at Yale University. Honored to be a graduate of that fine alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
And, my degree was in molecular biochemistry and biophysics. And,
A major that you need a degree in to understand what that major is. Continue.
So I spent my bright college years in labs and doing genetic research as well as cancer research early on. I'm just to be clear, I was not, you know, if anybody's out there in the science fields, I was not a first author nor a second author nor the last author. I was listed in one or two journals, but because I did a lot of pipetting in my years and my thumbs deserve to be listed in the paper. Back in college, that's honestly when I fell in love with New Haven. I'll tell you, when I fell in love with Yale was on day one. I just fell in love with the university. I'm very happy I went there. Fell in love with New Haven on day one of living here in the summers. And when I finally, you know, after my freshman year, I went back to Kentucky and then after my sophomore year, I stayed here and really just fell in love with New Haven right away. Never really stopped that love, I would say. So because of my lab, I had summers in New Haven working in labs, doing research. that, you know, led me into coming back to New Haven when I got offered a job out of college. And then, so yeah, so 14 years ago today, I'd been walking the aisle, opening that degree and shocked and appalled that they would actually give me one.
So you said, you got your first job out of college here in New Haven. What was that?
Sort of. Yeah. So I actually, the first thing I did out of college, my spring semester, I worked for a group called Prometheus Research. They're still over on Church Street. Mm-hmm. They're doing great stuff. At the time, they had just created XHTML, which was like a database language for knowledge sharing across the internet. Mm-hmm. And for they were working with us in Elena Grigorenko's lab doing autism research. And so they had linked up our autism research at this lab with autism research at other labs, and the amount of data transfer was impressive. So they actually hired me to be a contract worker for spring semester. So I actually lived here, didn't go anywhere spring break, and worked right through until graduation for them. And really started feeling out, you know, that I wasn't, by the time I graduated, I realized I wasn't long for the science world, you know? And so,
when you say by the time, do you mean like after that first summer
or I think
degree in hand after walking the stage?
You know, I was fairly intellectually immature, I would say, and didn't recognize what I liked and didn't like in school.
I don't think that's atypical of a 21-year-old, right?
I'm not embarrassed to say that I didn't recognize what intellectual curiosity looked like. My favorite course at Yale was called Study of the City, and it was taught by Alex Garvin. I took it freshman year semester, but I was a science person.
Oh, so sure.
I just had brainwashed myself to just never look at any, oh, that's a humanities, or that's a history,
right,
or that's a urban studies course. That's not for me.
That's
I'm a science person.
I don't need to, yeah.
So I wish I had more sort of understanding of my own desires back then. But so I, you know, when I graduated, I actually started I franchised a friend's business. My friend owns Universal Hotel Liquidators. And so I ended up franchising his business and opening a retail store, 25,000 square foot warehouse in Tampa, Florida.
Oh.
And so what I did was, after the hurricanes of 04, which I can't remember the names of the hurricanes, but they were on the east coast of Florida.
04.
Yeah. Pre-Katrina.
Yeah, that's pre-Katrina.
Yeah. Katrina's like 05. Andrew, maybe. Irene, maybe.
No,
Hurricane Irene.
Irene was
Irene's
far
up here.
Yeah.
It's 12. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not a storm guy, but I'm from Kentucky, so like hurricanes didn't mean anything to me. So I ended up buying out a hotel, all of the damage. So like about 700 good rooms and then 300 damaged rooms I had to like throw away. But
yeah,
I reclaimed all the 700 good rooms in Daytona Beach and then opened a warehouse in Tampa and had some investment seed capital from somebody we had raised money from to kind of buy out the first project. And so I was a small business startup with seed capital. Angel investor type thing.
Yeah.
Back when, before this was all popular again to be a startup with seed capital and things like that. But, you know, it was a wonderful experience to work with my friend and business partner, Mark Holden, my friend and business partner at the time, David White, my friend, John Barbie. And, you know, Mark quickly left the business. You know, we opened a store. So I actually lived here in the summer of 04, setting up the business financially and legally and all of that jazz, and then started to do advertisement and trying to find my first deal. In the fall, I actually sold furniture to all of the local universities, and I did that most of my falls. I was just sort of a hustler from the get-go, and I was selling furniture.
But like a hustler in khakis.
Well, yes.
As opposed to a hustler with like a gold cane and a top hat.
I would say like a hustler with jean shorts.
Okay.
Because, you know,
jorts?
I was
oh
like,
my God.
I mean, it's not like I'm from Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, jorts, what can you say? Probably had cargo shorts on. I probably had cargos on. But not the prep guy that I am now. So every fall I would sell furniture off of Elm Street out of a truck, and make some money on commissions. And then every, and then when I graduated, I basically just amped that up. So in the fall of 04, I sold to 6 area-wide universities, had an online platform. People could buy furniture from us and stuff. And
it was here?
It was here in the New Haven region. And then when that was over, I had to like move out of my apartment because somebody was moving in for school. So I ended up living in my parents' basement for a good 2 months.
Back in Kentucky.
Back in Kentucky with my business partner. God bless my parents for putting up with that. And my mom was very quick to remind me that she was going to charge me rent as of January 1. So I had like 3 months free rent.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is a fortune and a blessing, you know, to be able to say that ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So my first gig was in Puerto Rico, had a project down in San Juan, where I lived in San Juan for a few months and sold furniture out of a pier, out of a pop-up tent on Pier 11 in Old San Juan. Actually had a hurricane and 2 tropical storms come through. I lost 0 pieces of furniture. One of my most crowning achievements of my operational life is just how do you protect against a hurricane?
How did you?
In a tent. Lots of rope. And big stakes.
Yeah.
Big stakes.
Yeah.
And then elevating everything. So we actually, there was a flood, but I had elevated all the furniture up 6 inches.
So you lost nothing and nothing was damaged?
Yeah.
Wow. That is
I was actually open on one of the tropical storm days.
Really?
And did some business. It was good.
Did you? So priorities. Not money, for you, for your
money
customers.
Never sleeps. Right? Cash is king. Money never sleeps.
It's true.
So I lived in Puerto Rico for a little bit doing that sort of work. And then the deal in Daytona Beach came through. So we ended up moving to Florida permanently, bought a house in Florida, joined the Chamber of Commerce in Florida. My business partner went back to school and he's now a doctor. He actually, very funny story, sidebar. He started in a humanities major, did post-bac work, and then is now a urologist and operated on a killer whale's urethra. Had to come up with a better name. There was a kidney stone situation or whatever, so we ended up operating in the San Diego Zoo's killer whale.
Oh my gosh.
Or something. Maybe that's a HIPAA violation. I'm sorry, Mr. Killer Whale, Mrs. Killer Whale, whatever killer whale.
Well, I think it's fine to say because it's the equivalent of saying operated on someone.
There you go. Yeah.
Right?
So it was a successful operation, but I think the whale died in the end anyway. It was a very tragic.
It's a circle of life.
But so that's how I got my start. I was offered, so he left pretty early. We had opened the store in January. He left by May or April. Mm. That was 1 year of him. And so then it was on me, which was a lot of fun. It's also very challenging. And I also had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I'd run organizations in college. I had been a clerk at a pet store. I'd run a pool.
Which one?
It's called Pets and Such. It's in Dixie Highway.
Okay.
It's no longer there, but in Kentucky.
Okay.
So, you know, I had some retail experience, but you know, that was sales associate and stock boy, you know?
I just love the development of your resume right now.
But hey,
at the end of the show, after we know everything there is to know about Doug Huslater, I want to know what that like that little blurb at
the top.
Call
my mom. Ask her how stressful it is to be the mother of someone who has a waywarding career.
Yeah,
she wants is for me to be settled and relaxed.
Does she feel like because you've been here in New Haven working in this position? Before I was a reporter, so...
I started my 5th year this year.
Okay, so maybe not before I was a reporter.
And before that, I was an alder before then.
Okay, so that's where I know...
That's where you started, I mean, yeah.
So, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Does your mom feel like you're settled now?
Yeah.
Or does she feel like, you know, this is just another one of your stops on the way to settlement?
I'm curious, you know, I'll leave that up to my mother. she has been very much dutifully focused on my father's health and whatnot for the last 6 years, and so it's been. But I think she realizes it's more than a, you know, it's a passion and an interest and a skill set, and it's all sort of working out for me. Thanks to the mayor for taking the risk on me.
Yeah. So let's get straight to that. You were an alder before you started vying for the job that you're currently in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At that point, you had had, you know, some retail experience.
Mm-hmm.
You had been a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
You had a degree in a science field, mm-hmm. a STEM. How can I judge You were a part of, this is going to be funny, salvaging efforts mm-hmm. down in...
Post-hurricane.
Post-hurricane.
Yeah.
Recycling.
Yeah, it's a green company.
Exactly.
So it was all landfill diversion.
So how do you get from that to where you are now?
Well, the big professional experience I have was an opportunity that somebody gave me to manage property in New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
For about 8 years, I think, 06 to about seven, whatever. I can't do math. 06 to...
Well, yeah. I mean, nothing in your resume says you can do math.
It's just this
so
weird...
I'm not holding you to that.
I was full-time for 6 years, and then I went part-time for like 2 years and consulted mm-hmm. for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was given an opportunity to help a small company expand their portfolio. It's called Elm Campus Partners.
Okay.
They had one contract for residential management for Yale properties, and then they had another contract where they were adding an 06 for commercial properties and more residential.
Mm.
And so they hired me to be sort of a lease manager, property manager,
mm-hmm.
To help manage the commercial portfolio that they were taking on. So they needed somebody with, you know, I'd done my own lease negotiations and my commercial lease, which was very expensive to have 25,000 square feet in Florida.
Yeah.
But it hadn't self-negotiated out of like down to 50% of the cost and things. So I kind of knew had some experience doing that. And they were looking to hire young and train.
Mm.
And so I was definitely trainable and young at the time, and was given an opportunity to come up here. And I remember actually interviewing. It was graduation weekend for 2006.
Mm.
So I had flown up and I am a Yale graduate, so forgive me for a moment when this sounds completely pretentious. It was like a 9-hour interview day. I remember that. We did toward the portfolio. I met with the two principals each for like an hour each. And then it was a small company, so they really were really focused on who they were hiring. And after the interview, I remember by the end of the day using the pronoun we instead of they.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, crap. I feel like I'm a part of this company already.
Yeah.
And my friend of mine, whom I played water polo with in college, was over at Jonathan Edwards at their, which is probably today or Friday, where it's like their senior scotch tasting.
Mm.
And it's their annual scotch tasting and croquet match.
Okay.
That's the pretentious part.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yep.
Forgiven.
Thank you. So I went over, and I, you know, I'm a science, so he's like a humanities guy. So he's in this long philosophical debate about some existential crises
sure,
and threat
sure.
that philosophy majors really care about. And I remember just listening and drinking scotch in the middle of my favorite city, wondering, how the hell am I going to like take this job? Like, I want to be here. Like, why am I not here?
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly like when I was gone for 20 months, I visited like 18 times.
Yeah.
Like it became very evident that I wanted to be here.
New Haven's a great city.
And so given the job, I remember setting a price to my salary, which was honestly in the hindsight too low, but I remember putting a price to it because I was a kid. I was making like $14,000 on my startup. So I thought anything over that was great.
Right.
I remember them offering me the exact figure that I put in my head.
And you're thinking, ooh, I should have asked more.
and I was like, this is meant to be. Like,
yeah.
I'll figure it out. So when I moved to New Haven, I ended up managing a lot of property. And so I was the person out on the street at 4 a.m. on snow days to make sure that the snow contractors were starting. I was the person called at 2 in the morning when there was a drunk driver that hit the building and having to open up the walls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for a long time and learned a lot of financial management and how to, so I did a lot of the budgeting and the monthly reporting on mm-hmm. finances, mm-hmm. at least the draft and preparation. We had like a CFO, he's an owner of the company that would actually put his name on it and correct my edits and stuff like that. But, learned a lot about P&Ls and balance sheets through that work. And, also how to manage vendors. And so, you know, part of my skill set in that I was developing was like, how do you leverage technology for operational efficiencies?
Yeah.
So one thing, my greatest claim to fame, I swear to God, this, you know,
this better be good.
It's not, but it really helped on the bottom line.
Okay.
We had Nextels. Everybody had Nextels.
Yeah,
remember Nextels?
I do.
Everybody had
I
the
do.
Two-way.
Yep.
Two-way me back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
the little walkie-talkie.
A little walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
And we had actually just upgraded, or there was an opportunity to like upgrade to a picture phone for like same cost and stuff like that, but get away from Nextels. And
by picture phone, of course, you mean camera phone.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. But like, not these phones.
Not of course. Of
not
course.
These
We're
guys.
Talking about, you know,
flipping
razors and
yeah,
yeah.
Razors. This mm-hmm. is the era of razors. And we found out that text messaging was then free. And so I actually devised a way to
text messaging was free on the plan that you were given on your okay, got it.
But like not originally. Like text yeah. messaging was wicked expensive
yeah.
when it started.
It was 10 cents a word?
It was crazy. It
yeah.
was whatever it was. So then it switched and I was like, oh, okay. So we used to a call would come in, broken toilet, emergency service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Broken toilet. All right. Thank you, resident. Call the Nextel. Hit them up on Nextel. Hey, we got a broken toilet. Go there.
Mm-hmm.
They would write out a work order. We would write out a work order. Our work order in the office would have a work order number.
Mm-hmm.
The work order in field had no work order number. So I added this really stupid free thing where I taught everyone how to email through Outlook. Putting at vtext.com
mm-hmm.
to the phone number.
Yep, yep.
Something really stupid. But we were able to text message out the work order number after we radioed for service.
Mm.
So then the folks in the field would get the call, respond immediately, would write up a blank form. And by the time they finished writing up the form, they had their work order number.
Nice.
So in the back end in the office, it saves somebody two physical days a week of just literally matching up work orders to field work.
Right, right.
And that was my greatest sort of innovation.
Well, I mean,
it's just
so
it's just small.
It's small, but
it's meaningful.
That resonates with me because when you are working for a little bit of a an outdated company, right, or maybe even appropriately dated, but you're just a little bit further mm-hmm. ahead, and you bring and there's this clear change to the efficacy of the
mm-hmm.
work
mm-hmm.
that you're like, why aren't we doing this already?
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like magic to the company
hey,
you
Harry,
bring it to.
Shout out to Harry the Brave, Facebook Live, right?
Yeah, right.
Facebook Live has
right.
changed WNHH Radio.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Honestly.
I mean, also, so we just gassed Harry. I need to bring him down a bit because he did also break my mouse before this show, making it really difficult to navigate Facebook Live. So...
you can't win them all, Harry.
You're right. Since we're being meta for a moment, you are listening to...
Oh, that's a great point.
Right? You are listening to Work It Out on... Work It Out with Mercy Quay on WNHH Radio 103.5 FM, the show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates us to move. My guest today is Doug Housladen, who majored in the STEM field, sold furniture after that.
Used mattresses.
Used mattresses.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
There's nothing harder than selling a used mattress.
You literally would not have had a customer out of me because I have an irrational fear.
No
of
bed bugs.
Bed bugs.
No bed bugs.
Like I have so I travel on off peak hours because I don't want to bump against people who potentially have bed bugs.
That actually does make sense.
Great.
No, looking at you, I mean, you know, knowing you a little bit that I know, like this actually is fitting into the personality.
Well,
you got bigger room for the entourage.
I'm traveling to Curacao in about 8 weeks, and my entourage is pretty big. So
at the wedding,
it's for the wedding.
That's
right?
Exciting.
Well, it's for the bachelorette party, not the wedding.
Fair, fair.
Yeah.
Do they serve a lot of blue Curacao there?
I am hoping so.
So I'll get you a recipe for the Yale Blue Martini, which is a little bit of.
Should you tell this to me online on air?
Well,
that you're giving it away.
Is it a secret? It's a bit of a family secret.
Okay. That you're telling me that you're going to tell me.
Actually, I got it from Dr. Marvin Ahrens. If Dr. Ahrens is listening today, Marv, how you doing today?
Hey,
love
Marv, shout out.
What's up, Marv? we used to sip that on the rock, Adam.
Curacao?
Blue Curacao, a little lime juice.
Isn't that the main ingredient for a blue New York, no, Long Island iced tea? Blue.
Interesting.
There's like a blue Long Island iced tea.
I like it. It probably has the Curacao.
Yeah, because it's blue.
Don't forget. You're listening to WNH Radio LP 103.5, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We're streaming live on TuneIn Radio and newhavenindependent.org. And
if you're wondering why Doug is so much better at this than I am, it's because he is the perfect employee.
It's right here in front of me.
Oh, is it? We have one of those? I've been kind of just freestyling
it. Just go to facebook.com/newhavenindependent or go to your Facebook page and look us up. Facebook Live.
That's amazing.
So I learned how to, you know, do budgets, manage contractors, manage staff.
Yeah.
And work on a team to deliver, you know, a lot of value for University Properties and for the tenants and I got to know a lot of folks on that were managing small businesses. Chapel Street owners are wonderful. I'm still friends with a number of them. At least I think I'm friends with you. If you've just been nice to me this whole time, well done. You've pulled it off.
Tweet at him if you're not. Just let him know.
Oh, they will. You know, eventually folks started asking me to worry about things that were not in my job description. Mm-hmm. So like, we had a lot of urine in this one alcove that I'm remembering.
Which one?
You know, for the sake of the urine, we'll keep it anonymous. But
this is a HIPAA violation for the urine.
That's right. So the funniest part was we actually responded thinking that it was one issue and finding out that it's another issue. And the issue we found out that it was that it was a lot of drunk younger women. I'm only assuming drunk. We didn't do a breathalyzer the camera.
Okay.
There was a camera situated where there ended up being some people finding a private corner to take care of their business at night when they were out and about at night. People were peeing in public, but it was an alcove.
Wait,
so it was
so
a hidden.
If that was the issue, you didn't think it was.
We thought it was other people peeing. We knew it was pee.
Okay,
you know, we thought it was other people peeing.
You thought the type of person peeing was a different type of person.
Yeah,
we
you know, everyone was assuming one thing, mm-hmm. and it was a mixture of a few things, but it was the
primary culprit.
Most of the problems that we were getting complaints about with the volume of odor and the volume of urine and we took care of that with a little sign that said urine candy camera and then people stopped doing it.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But it was stuff like, you know, taking care of.
Did you say urine candy camera? That's really good.
So a lot of what people, you know, started asking about, you know, X, Y, or Z, and I started getting involved more in the management team downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to Ed Anderson and folks like Ken Gleisman, the mm-hmm. former chair of the management team downtown, for roping me in and sort of getting me involved. And I realized that the skill sets I was developing at the property management were fairly translatable to the public management, mm-hmm. The public right of way. And we got, you know, at the time, you know, I was living downtown and working downtown and going out downtown. Like my whole, you know, it was really
your whole sphere of being was downtown.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember vividly there was some shootouts at some intersections and there was a rash of gun violence mm-hmm. in downtown. Mm-hmm. And was really proud of the way that downtown responded to that and the administration at the time had responded to it too. But we put together forums on safety and, mm-hmm. and, you know, it has not gone back there, which is really great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a collective effort of everyone in the downtown really putting forth, decades and decades and decades of work on improving the collective of New Haven. You know, downtown used to not be a neighborhood. It's now a neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It used to be everyone's neighborhood on some level. And obviously that's a loaded statement because a lot of people felt like it was never their neighborhood.
Sure. Sure.
But you know, now there's a large residential population. And when Betsy Clark stepped down, she asked me if I would be interested in running for office. And I thanked her, you know, I stepped up to and ran for office and my first election was 2011.
Mm.
And then I was reelected again in 2013. And when Mayor Harp was elected, Jim Travers had resigned from this position to take a job at the United Way. And
mm-hmm.
there was a job vacancy. So I submitted my resume and cover letter. And a lot of the work I had done in the community was around safer streets.
Sure.
Was around policy.
Sure.
Changing some laws to make biking and pedestrianism and transit better. And I'm just really fortunate that my skills have been applicable and
transferable.
Transferable. Well,
yeah.
At least I hope so.
So, considering that you are probably the most malleable staffer anyone has ever met, and considering the fact that, you know, today is literally commencement for your alma mater.
Skills. What? Remember, do you remember Napoleon Dynamite?
Skills?
Do you remember Napoleon Dynamite at all?
Yeah.
Chicks dig skills. When he's talking about being I think it was a, he was like a, some sort of martial artist. And he was
you're talking about not Napoleon, you're talking about his uncle.
I think so.
Yeah. Chicks dig skills. Yeah. So
just build your skill sets up. I think I'm jump starting your question. Let me ask the question first so that the audience knows what we're talking about.
My fault. You're too good at things.
Sorry.
What are your pieces of advice for the class of 2000? What year are we in?
18.
The class of 2018 entering the job market right now.
I would say build your skills. That's a great question, Mercy. I hadn't thought about it yet. And what is a
remember when you said when on the phone you don't know what you would have to talk about? Remember when you said that?
No, I don't remember. But I think that our job market is so tough. On one hand, folks are getting pigeonholed into majors and jobs and just taught this fine point and then told that they can't leave it.
Yeah.
They're in this box of their major. And that's really tough for employers to sort of take risks because employers to take the risks on folks, it's exhausting. And also it's a literal risk.
Yeah.
You know, you're training somebody, you're spending a lot of resources. So I would say that, for you entering the job market, build your skills.
Mm-hmm.
If you think something's interesting, go find out why you think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Run it down as far as you can with as much time as you can. The other thing I would say about recent graduates is there is no rush, but there's kind of a rush. And that's not that helpful, but you don't need to be figuring it out by age 30.
Right.
You don't need to figure it out by X age. What I've been able to do in my short time as in a career is figure out where I want to be and walk it back, and then you have to plan and work your plan. So plan your work, work your plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I say plan your work, you know, I didn't grow up thinking I'd be the director of transportation. This is my dream job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm literally doing what I would want to be doing at the time that I want to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the blessings and the privilege is just oozing out of my nose.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't given this.
You worked for it.
And you
worked it out.
You worked it out. I didn't know what I was planning for, but I dressed for the job that I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kept working out. And I put in the extra hours when they needed somebody to work on the budget. I said, sure, I'm good at Excel. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I put in the time to figure out what all of the balance sheets and how the P&L statements and how your monthly reporting and the tricks of budgeting, you know, when there was an opportunity to serve New Haven as the budget panel commission of 2008, 2009, it was called the Citizens Blue Ribbon Budget Panel Commission. I volunteered. I was the junior person. I learned from that commission.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really help that commission. That was Tim Hollihan, Christine Bishop, and others. Jim Alexander, I think, or maybe it was David Cameron. David Cameron really carried that commission, and I learned from those folks. But my ears were open, my eyes were open. I was absorbing it in. YouTube is your friend is another big way that you can build skills.
So stay hungry, stay malleable,
stay willing, and you know if.
And for episodic continuity,
sure.
just the single question, what gets you worked up?
What gets me worked up? Inefficiencies. Inefficiencies in the system. Whatever the system is, inefficiencies get me worked up. And I get out of bed every day just trying to iron out inefficiencies because the better that I can spend my dollars in my department, the more dollars are going to be available for folks in the human services departments.
Yeah. Well, Doug, thank you so much for coming on the show. I can't imagine what you meant when you said you don't know what you would be able to talk about. But for you listening in, thank you again to listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, the show about what people do for work at work, streaming every Monday live at noon. Until next time, find out what your passion is and figure out how to work it out. Wonder what you're gonna do. Wonder if you're gonna make it. Wonder how long it'll take and will you ever get through. Can't see the light of day nowhere. Ooh.
story began with a star that fell to earth and landed where you are. You stumbled.